Well, good evening, and welcome to this EMC Squared monthly conference call. My name is Mike Connor, and I will be your host tonight. This call features Stephen Lewis, the creator of the AIM program, co-founder of EMC Squared, and the co-author of the novel Sanctuary, The Path to Consciousness. The AIM program of energetic balancing is a spiritual technology and is available today. We encourage you to learn more by visiting our website at www.aimprogram.com. Tonight's topic is healing addictions with the help of AIM. Let me share this disclaimer with each and every one of you. Please remember, energetic balancing is not healthcare nor medicine, and it does not diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure disease. EMC Square's spiritual technology assists you in healing yourself. When discussing energetic imbalances that have names that are the same or similar to names of diseases, participants on this call are talking about energetic imbalances only. They're not talking about actual diseases. Energetic imbalances are vibrations in consciousness on the spiritual plane. At this time, let me welcome Stephen Lewis to our monthly Founders Call series. Stephen, how are you today, sir?
I'm fine, Mike, and hello to everybody who's online and listening. And, well, let's get started.
We will.
You ask the questions, we try and answer.
So nothing's changed in all these years. I'm happy to do that very thing, Stephen.
Well, you know what? It's all changing all the time because, you know, there are really, to so much of this, Mike, I think it's important. There are no answers. It's just what we are learning, what we're all learning. I learn from people on the AIM program just as they learn from EMC Squared and from me. And we literally, truly are in this together. It's not as if, you know, in many religions, God talks to his emissary, the emissary talks to the faithful flock. That ain't what's happening. You know, I have no private line to any divine source of information or anything else. I have what I have learned and I try and share it with those who are interested. I believe that most of what life is, we don't really know. We have no clue. That's true, generally speaking, and it's true in the world of health and healing and well-being and ill-being. And I think of all this, this call, the calls that precede it and the calls that will follow it, as more of seminars where we all join together and say, hey, listen, this is what I've found, and that's why we're going to open the lines. And that's the reason, because someone out there listening has found something that I need to know and I want to know. So with that in mind, let's begin.
All right, we'll do. Stephen, AIM helps us with so many things. How is it that EMC Squared and the AIM program of energetic balancing can help us with our addictions?
Well, our addictions. Do we know what an addiction is? What are the addictions we're talking about? For example, because I think people use the word in a careless, almost slovenly way. Do you know anybody who you'd call a sugar addict?
I do.
Most people do. Most people would say, yeah, I do. And I think Judy, who's running the board, would say the same thing. Now, tell me something. If someone has their thyroid removed and takes thyroxine or T3 or T4, whatever it may be, would you call them a thyroxine addict, or are they just taking medication they need?
I would be the latter.
Right. Okay. So the sugar addict, you know, who you would call a sugar addict with all the ramifications, the connotations, you know, negative. If you suddenly found that this person was diabetic and simply could not metabolize sugar, couldn't get it to his muscles, so he had fuel in his muscles to move his butt from here to there, because that's what diabetes does. And he was just trying to get the fuel that you and I and everyone else needs, and he can't metabolize it, so he's just trying more and more to get it, and he's called a diabetic. Would you call a diabetic a sugar addict or somebody with an illness who needs to be treated?
And the latter.
Right. Well, this is kind of, you know, I think these questions are a little bit rhetorical. Just a tad, right?
Just a little.
that's the point. You know, I mean, to begin with, to what extent is an addiction simply a normal urge to try and satisfy a physical need? With something like sugar, obviously, it's very, very much of a setup to say it could be a sugar metabolism problem like diabetes, hypoglycemia, something of the sort. On the other hand, the addictions I think that we're talking about here are psychologically based, and that's something that we can look at and call addictive behavior. Does that make sense to you?
It does, yes.
Yeah, I know, and I think that's an important distinction to be made, because you can be a sugar addict and be fat because of it, but you're still not getting any fuel to your muscles. You have no sugar whatsoever to metabolize. All you're doing is having it turn to fat, and that's the obvious example. And someone who doesn't take his thyroid medication can't get up off the couch. He just doesn't have the energy to move. And on and on and on. But the AIM program, first of all, can help them also, because one of maybe our foremost axiom is many things cannot be treated. There is nothing that cannot be healed. And that includes the problems with the thyroid, with the pancreas, with this, with that, with whatever. You can heal yourself. And there are examples of that always available in the medical journals, saying, where they're saying basically, I don't know why, but this guy no longer needs to take that. He got better. What did he do?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I never forget in the book The Stand by Stephen King, when somebody didn't die from something they're supposed to die from, they wanted to kill him because he was upsetting all their statements and predictions. Remember, you probably read The Stand.
I remember.
Now, yeah, so that's that. And you can heal, if you heal the hereditary imbalances that give rise to your diabetes, and if your body changes, you no longer will crave sugar the same way, and you will have healed your sugar addiction, which wasn't that to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If, on the other hand, we speak about, oh, I don't know, let's call it heroin, or cocaine, or sex, the addictions that we perceive as psychologically created, psychological in their origin, the question really is, what is there about them? For a moment, forget about healing them. Try and understand what creates this kind of addictive behavior. You know, and I'd be interested in hearing, you know, let me hear your take on what do you think creates addictive behavior, Mike? What do you think?
Well, on this, if we're ruling out, for instance, imbalances, the addictive behavior can go back to something karmic or probably go back to something early in childhood that was a coping mechanism for something else, if you want to get into the psychology of what may be involved.
Oh, no, I don't want to get into psychology. I just wonder, is there, you have probably known addicts, whether it's heroin or it's coke, whatever it may be. I assume you've known them. You've been out in the streets, as I have. And I'm sure you know them. Is there something about people who are addictive in this sense that you find to be distinctly different from you and from me?
I find them to utilize a couple of phrases we'll talk about at other times. Level of consciousness play a role. I think there is, as you have said many times, that life is a plea for courage. I think that some things might have gone on in their lives and negatively affected them, and this is a coping mechanism, perhaps.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, again, this is a discussion. It's not a quiz or it's not a – it's just a discussion. You said level of consciousness. Now, so many people equate consciousness with intelligence. And there is absolutely no relationship between consciousness and intelligence. I mean, I don't think you can be highly conscious – if you're like sitting there like a drooling imbecile. But I mean, outside of that kind of an example, I don't think there's any relationship between intelligence and consciousness. And you've heard me define consciousness many, many, many times. And I see it predominantly as the degree to which you perceive your connection to everyone and everything. Now, consciousness is something that we nominally pursue, all of us. But at times, we don't pursue it with as much avidity as with other times. For example, at the end of the day, if I've had a tough day, I sit down and I have myself some wine. Do you still do the same thing?
I do indeed.
Right. It takes the edge off, doesn't it?
It does.
And you're not quite as connected to whatever your reality is as you were, and you prefer it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's correct.
Now, if someone's listening who's a member of AA, they'd say, well, we do that every day. If you said, well, most days, they'd say, you're an alcoholic. You're an addict. You're aware of that, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get what they're saying. I think they're nuts in a way. But I think they got to say it because they cannot have a drink or a glass of wine and then let it go.
Yes.
I've seen people sit down to have a drink and finish an entire fifth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so have you. And the difference is you prefer to stay within a certain degree with a certain framework of consciousness. So do I. Some don't.
Yes.
When you sit and become a nodding out, junkie, just, you sit and do your heroin, you're just there nodding out. I would say you prefer no contact, no consciousness. You prefer no contact with everything and everyone. You sit and go through it in your head. You do not perceive and feel other people. You don't want to.
That's correct.
You are the ultimate in self-involvement, which is the exact opposite of consciousness. Yeah, I mean, and I believe consciousness, the ultimate consciousness is the ultimate sanity and the ultimate spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the ultimate unconsciousness is the ultimate insanity. And that's where your psychology seems to come in because yeah, you and I have a glass of wine at the end of the evening. I don't know if Judy does, probably. But it doesn't matter. She has. I've seen her have a drink. But none of us sit down and get blotto, dead drunk, falling on our face. What is the difference? What do you think? Now, that's where that statement was made by a friend of mine, actually, that life is a plea for courage. That's where that comes in. And, you know, I said before, the AIM program, yes, I believe it can help quite a bit with the addictions that are caused by physical disparities, by physical problems. Again, diabetes or something of that sort, with the sugar addiction. But it does it dealing directly. But I find the AIM program helps with the other kind of addictions. And even that isn't so clean. You've heard me tell you before, almost everyone with a classic addictive behavior has the frequency of hereditary syphilis.
Yes, I have heard that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, it's no secret that one of the consequences, classically, of syphilis is insanity. You become nuts, you know, clearly. I mean, you've heard that. You know, everyone knows it.
Sure.
Right?
Indeed, yes.
Right. Now, there are people, I would never say something like this publicly, but, for example, take a guy like Wayne Dyer, respected, loved as he should be. How many millions of people has Wayne Dyer helped? By helping them think with greater clarity, with greater consciousness. So I have nothing but great admiration for Wayne. And yet he's written about his basic addictive behavior.
Yes, he has.
And I say he's written about it in books. And whenever he writes a book, it sells millions of copies. So it ain't no secret. Okay? If he wanted it to be a secret, he shouldn't have put it in his book. So... It because every, and I've said before, I've never seen anyone with an addictive personality who didn't have the frequency of hereditary syphilis.
Hmm.
Now, this interaction is where, you know, is where the fine line is. I have an addictive personality, and my statement stands. But the frequency of hereditary syphilis is hardly rare.
Yes.
It's one of the most common of all hereditary imbalances, according to Hahnemann and according to my work in energetics. I was a heavy smoker. I was a tobacco addict. I don't know if you ever were. You were a swimmer. I don't know if you were.
Nope. Never once.
Right. And I stopped. And, you know, I could feel that urge, that craving for years after I stopped. I don't feel it anymore. I don't know, maybe I'm just a little deader than I was. Who knows? But I don't feel it. I had to fight. I was the kind of person who took a drink and then another and another. And I had to fight, and I did it successfully, the desire to keep drinking. Oh, it's no big deal. It feels good. I'm cool. I've got to get, we've all been there, right?
Sure, of course.
But I've had to fight. Have you ever had to fight that?
Not to that degree. College is a whole other issue, but no, I have been blessed not to have that kind of
challenge. Yeah. You didn't have the frequency of hereditary syphilis. Now, but many, many, many do. When you lose that frequency, there is still something in you that creates addictive behavior. Now, where does that, it's gone? I have found many, many, many frequencies. And when I say this is an unknown hereditary imbalance, It's a bunch of numbers. So I go, all right, so what's it like? How many of them in your experience have been like hereditary syphilis?
More than a handful.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
Judy's there. She's the historian. Is
I'm
that
grinning.
Correct, Judy? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Many. Yep.
Right. More than a handful is a very modest statement. Okay?
Especially for those of us that have addictive personalities.
Yeah. Uncharacteristic, you know, modesty, Mike. And so, yeah, we might as well laugh. What the hell? What are you going to do if you don't laugh? But are these syphilis wannabes, you might as well call them that, are they the same in that respect? In that that's one of the things they create, that tendency toward addictive behavior. Now, I've noticed in me and a few others I know well. I mean, with all the thousands on the AIM program, there aren't that many I know well personally. But those whom I do know, I've noticed as they get down to the bottom of the barrel where there's nothing left hereditarily or very little left, and what is left is not at all like syphilis, that they seem to be less and less and less addictive. I found that. Judy, does that strike a responsive chord in you?
It totally matches my own personal story that if we have time I'll share later with people, but totally matches it, Stephen, completely.
Yes, and so that is part of the AIM program, dealing with something in a linear manner. There is a hereditary imbalance, whether it's something known called syphilis, something unknown. What's it like? Well, it's like syphilis. Okay. Call it a syphilis wannabe, right? Call it what you want. But once these are gone, I think the energy, the pathological energy for addictive behavior leaves also. And yet we get back to what I said before. There are people who want as little contact with consciousness as possible, which means they want as little contact with spirituality as possible. I see them as being one and the same. And, you know, that's why it's been interesting in my lifetime, in my 70s, you know, I certainly went through the 60s, which was the drug time, right? Unlike President Clinton, I did inhale, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference in drugs. I can think back about things like LSD, as can many, and including ex-presidents of the United States, so it's not a big deal, and say, I felt I had greater spirituality with them, and yet when I think about an addictive behavior to something like tobacco or whatever it may be, and say, well, that removed me from reality. That removed me from contact with humanity. It removed me from consciousness. And in a way, you know, we're gravitating toward the thing about healing the same way that's why. Ultimately, when you heal yourself, we now heal ourselves with amazing rapidity compared to when you and I and Judy first met on the AIM program. I believe we are calling in so much of the universe to assist us in our healing. That makes sense to you?
That's a very interesting perspective, Stephen, and it actually does make sense to me.
Judy, what do you think?
I totally do, and I'll just share this very quickly with you, Stephen, because I had no idea what you were going to say tonight, but I was thinking about, okay, what's the biggest addictive behavior that I feel that AIM helped me tremendously with, and it would be smoking. I mean, I had quit a couple times prior to being on AIM, and then I just found that I was increasingly saying, okay, this isn't matching what I really want for myself, and I quit pretty easily in 2005, and then I quit again pretty easily in 2007. But I always started it again, and that's why I say it matches this getting closer and closer to the bottom of the barrel, because I quit Stephen completely effortlessly a year and a half ago, and not only did I quit, I absolutely had zero cravings. Now, that was at the time that I got so sick that there was no way I could even, didn't even have the strength to light a cigarette, but the byproduct was I didn't smoke, and all of a sudden I said, wow, I haven't smoked in 2 weeks, and I'm like, cool, and that was the end of it. No cravings whatsoever. So,
right,
and I attribute that to the increased, getting rid of the imbalances, of course, but the increasing awareness and just increasing strengthening, if you will, that I allowed it to be easier than I ever, it was a big deal to quit before. I was giving up my best friend.
Well, let's get back to our main topic for a moment, and we never left it, but I reached a point for me, because I can only really speak empirically about me, obviously, that the thought that occurred to me in regard to smoking or regard to anything that I would consider to be destructively addictive. And I don't consider a glass of wine at the end of the day destructively addictive. If someone from AA needs to call it that, go for it, dude. It's okay. I don't care. You know? But I'm speaking my language, and I'm explaining what I mean. When I was capable of perceiving that my acting in this manner was very simply a manifestation of a huge lack of gratitude for all I've been given. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think I could have perceived that or given a damn back early on when I was like, they say, yeah, someone could have said, you got to stop smoking because it means you're not grateful. Okay, right. Pass the ashtray. You got a light? You know. It makes sense, Judy?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, it means you're not grateful. Okay, I'm not grateful. Can I have a match, please? And then we'll continue the conversation. But as my consciousness increased, and as you heal more and more on the AIM program, you are capable of perceiving things like that, manifesting the sequela and the consequences of that in your life. Now the idea of my not being grateful for all I've been given is anathema. It's not something I can comfortably sit and say, yeah, that's me, the ingrate.
Sure, sure.
And
Do you have other kinds of hereditary frequencies that align sort of like syphilis does, those who have an addictive behavior?
Well, it's hard to say, simply because, look, take something like the frequency of hereditary cancer. Well, 92% of the world has it. Now, so is that part and parcel of the addictive package? If so, well, what how would you prove it? Because 92% have it. But without a doubt, the frequency of hereditary syphilis, which is known to cause insanity, is there for everyone who has real addictive behavior. I'm not talking about the guy with a glass of wine at night that the person from AA is ranting about. Know what I mean? I mean, you know what a real addict is. Eileen, can I have a glass of water, please? Thank you, hon. And you know what I mean? It's very simple. I'm not talking about them. They want to rant about it, go ahead. But we all know, and Judy knows what I mean. And I think most listeners do.
Stephen, I'm wondering if the enhancing frequencies, which we have discussed many times on Thursday mornings, Everything is Energy program, especially these last several months, do you believe that perhaps the volitional calling in of those frequencies to help us raise our consciousness is part and parcel with your desire and Judy's desire to transform yourself from some ungrateful kinds of episodes, and therefore that part is filling the void that those other.
This is really funny because I was going to bring that up next, and I said, "No, let's see if I can manipulate Mike." And I did it.
Well done.
And,
well
but because it was time for that. Well, here's the answer in my mind to what you're saying. It's not yes, it's more than yes. I think Judy understands that the same way. We all do. You utilize the enhancing frequencies infinitely more as your consciousness gets higher. And it is circular because the more you utilize them, the higher your consciousness becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So they each act upon the other in that circular manner. And when I would say that it's probable that you are utilizing them, and Judy is, more than I am right now. Because you guys are finished healing any hereditary imbalance. And I'm still back there, as is Eileen. You know, each week, I say maybe this week, and it's going to happen. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. But, for example, people who, as you have fewer and fewer hereditary imbalances, as your life force gets higher and higher, people, and I look at this, okay? I look to see who is selecting the enhancing frequencies to augment courage, who's selecting the enhancing frequencies to help remove doubt. I mean, how powerful is that? Okay? Who's selecting the enhancing frequencies to help augment the concept and the frequency of unconditional love and that of perpetual gratitude, and on and on and on. Okay, the frequency to help and enable you to welcome love in your life. Big deal, you know. It's like one of my great insights in dealing with everything about myself was to realize what I am doing is not letting people in. Now, that's not an absolute statement, like somebody who's catatonic in a little room in the corner.
Sure.
But in my way, I was off-putting, not letting you know. And I had to remind myself to let people in. I don't have to remind myself a hell of a lot anymore. And I think that's inevitable. Once you perceive it, once it's in your consciousness, it grows in your consciousness. And when that grows in your consciousness, you're willing to allow people in. Well, if that's the case, you're going to have not letting them in. Let's face it, somewhere that's a manifestation of fear, isn't it?
Indeed, yes.
I mean, do you think fear is not of consequence and relevance to addictive behavior? Well, go ahead, you guys. Help me out.
I would think it plays a huge role in that.
Yeah.
Judy, what do you think?
I was just going to ask you to get to that topic of the emotional aspects of these imbalances. I know, and I believe everybody's deals with fear at various levels. But you had also mentioned as I recall, Stephen, in your previous addictions call, something about disappointment being associated too with addictive behavior. Am I right?
That's right. Well, that's the emotion that fuels several of these imbalances that are syphilis wannabes and other things too. But yeah, it's all so incestuous. And to what extent does the capacity for courage come in? I mean, if I were to deal with someone addictive, and I actually try not to, because I've reached a point in life where, you know, I try to not deal with people whom I find too difficult. But if I were dealing with somebody highly addictive and I had to, I would try and let them know how their capacity to manifest courage is the biggest thing in their lives, because everyone has fear to one degree or another. You know, I mean, the glass half empty, half full is a real thing. Everyone has some fear. But that plea that life makes for courage is the difference between somebody who is unwilling and afraid and incapable of dealing with life and somebody who meets it right on and says, I'm here for you.
Well, Stephen, even though that you mentioned that Judy and I may be sort of complete in our physical detox, and that all the frequencies and the disease frequencies that we're working on, we still have the opportunity to work on the consciousness level and the spiritual level.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is no end. There is no end to your degree of consciousness. There is no end to your degree, your capacity to deal with life as a source of bountiful plenty, a source of joy. There's no end to the degree to which you can welcome life, allow it in, and allow it to go through you. There is no end. It is infinite. And for me, in my finite little world, it's pretty tough to measure the infinite. Let's put it this way. We could be, guys like you two, and I would say me, and all of us really, just whether I'm finished or not, it's still, I think I've, you know, kind of made my choice. I think that we are entering the most important part of our lives, the most important phase of our lives. That's why I've said to you before, Mike, Jesus, how do you not get jealous of your kid, Mike's kid, JP, you know? Oh, is he 5 years old now?
Almost. 2 months away, yeah.
So he's four. He ain't got nothing. He's healed every single imbalance. And, you know, look at the difference. In my mind, what life offers him, is open to for him, is so extraordinary. He's 4 years old, and he has all the attendant things with each imbalance, the bitterness of cancer, the fear of this, the disappointment, the cynicism, the this, the that, because every hereditary imbalance has its negative component. And when you have 50, 60 hereditary imbalances, and one by one, you got to scrape them away, and each bit of negativity comes out, biting and fighting and kicking and screaming, until you reach a point where you don't have these totally glued into you at the most basic, fundamental, primitive level in your blood, in your lymphatics, in your bones, in your lungs, in your kidneys, in your heart. And that's, I mean, this is what it's going to be like for people like your son. What do you think about that, Judy? Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. I'm just going 50 or 60. Stephen Lewis wishes he only had 50 or 60 hereditary imbalances.
or whatever they are.
But you're right. I get jealous of Mike's kid too. I think about him a lot. And these babies that have amazingly high life forces because their parents have been on the AIM program. It's just blows my mind.
I wasn't going to bring this up, but the last words I said to him before I came down to conduct this interview with you was that I was going to be on the phone with my friend Stephen, and he turns to me and he says, Daddy, how does Stephen look inside me and find out what's wrong and what I need to fix? And this
That's
is a
an interesting. And what'd you tell him?
He said, "Is it?" And he asked me. He goes, "Does he use X-rays?" And I said, "John Paul," I said, "I'll be done talking with him in a few moments. I'll be upstairs, and we can talk all about it then."
Well, you know what? I would say the answer is, I have basically developed to a great extent my gift to seek, encourage, feel my contact with others. I am connected to him when I do an evaluation for John Paul and for you and for Julie, for anyone I'm doing. I strive to be connected to them because that's the essence of it all. I am trying to be connected. I remember all the cliches about it. Like, what you do to the least of mine, you do to me. And I'm thinking about being in the oneness, and we're all one big hologram, and I try and feel. Because I must have something in front of me. I have his picture, his hair or whatever, blood. But I use his photo, same thing, or him. And I strive to feel him because there is a connection. We are connected. It is up to me to feel that connection, and I work at it, and that's work, and it's my job. But you can tell him very simply, Stephen feels it's his work and his job in life. He's been blessed to be given that work, and he works at doing it better and better and more and more, and that's true.
I will share that.
And we
with
all
him
do that.
Thank you.
You do it. Judy does it. You do it.
So, hey, Mike, you could show him the eval demo video, maybe at some point. He could probably, he's probably old enough to go, wow, that's cool.
it's very interesting the things that he can come up with. But hey, guys, I got a sense we've been hogging the phone lines here a little bit. Judy, what do you think about we take a few minutes and open this? This discussion up to other individuals who would like to learn more about the AIM program or about healing addictions. They may have some themselves. They may have family members who are struggling with these incredible challenges. Judy, let me turn it over to you and invite our friends to join us if they have questions or comments.
Okay, anybody, but just raise your hand by hitting 5 star 5 and then the star key on your phone. That'll raise your hand on the little board here, and then when I see a little question mark next to your name, I'll either, if I have your name, I'll say your name, or else I'll say your area code, and you'll hear me once I unmute your line. You'll hear a little system voice say that your line's unmuted, and you can start speaking with Stephen Lewis. So, again, 5 star lets us know that you would like to share a comment or ask a question about addictions or anything else. 5 star. Don't be shy. I just admitted my former addictions.
And Stephen, while those folks are getting ready to voice their question and summon the courage to talk and to spend time here, tell us a little bit about how you expect we will, through the balancing of all of these frequencies, the best ways in which the anti-aging frequencies that you're working on will assist our organs in working properly over time for the extra, 60, 70, 80 years they're going to have to work beyond normal.
Well, first of all, that 60, 70, or 80 only achieves a state of credibility when it's well on its way and happening. Now, I am old, but I ain't old enough to give that credibility. But I'm not even sure what your question is, Mike. You know, I mean...
Well, we know
It's, you know, anti-aging. I think I've said before, to me, there's so much in it that's mechanical. People fundamentally age and die because of a manifestation of what they've brought with them. Our work at EMC Squared is to help them heal things, not just in terms of what they've acquired, what is active, but to heal the capacity for it, the hereditary imbalance that becomes active. And so it's a big question. That's why I can't answer it except empirically. And listen, give me more time. I need it. But,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
another 60 years, but I'm going to have to draw the line there.
Well, let's see, you know. In 59 years, you may change your mind.
Yeah, there you go.
Stephen said, I can tell people I'm going to live till I'm 140, but they may not believe me until I'm like 139.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But maybe, we do. Here we go. We have somebody that's ready. If you guys are ready, or you still want to talk anti-aging, Mike, you ready? Okay.
Let's go.
We have Carla. She's already had a chance to say hi to Stephen. Go ahead, Carla.
Hi, Judy. Hi, Mike and Steve.
Hello.
I have a question since I hear you talking about, you know, some word I think in Italian and then I don't say it in English, so you have to forgive me. If somebody is an alcoholic and I know a person that is an alcoholic, and I was thinking, you know, I am always telling people about EMC too because, you know, for healing and things like that. Would that get help if they join? Do they have to ask or be cured from alcoholic, which, you know, most of the people who are alcoholic, they don't think are alcoholic?
Well, see, that's why we began this program, Carla, by saying to what extent is something an addiction, or to what extent is it simply a physical imbalance? Now, if the person you're talking about is taking alcohol to get sugar into his body because he can't utilize sugar well, you know, if I had to have sugar, look, I'd rather have a glass of wine than a Twinkie. You know, I mean, and I think Mike and Judy would say the same thing. So the question begins with, why is this person an alcoholic? But it doesn't matter, on the other hand, because whether it is an addictive personality problem or whether it is a sugar metabolism problem, either way, the AIM program can help him heal that imbalance. There's no separate program for emotional imbalances as opposed to physical ones. It's all there together, and because they are all together. And what's the answer to what you're saying? You know what? I wish I knew the answer, because I believe everybody needs this, everybody.
Yeah.
And most people hear this, and most people don't get it. Now, I don't know you, Carla, if I never met you. I don't know if you're a genius or just average. But
I'm average.
You're what? You're above average?
No,
But you're way above average in consciousness, because this resonated within you and you got it. You perceived that this was real, that to understand the AIM program is to manifest and show higher consciousness, because it's all about consciousness and nothing but consciousness, because we are nothing but consciousness or the lack of consciousness. That's what we are, if I speak as a physicist or if I speak a spiritual language, it's the same. So all you can do is what I do, same thing. And, you know, I tell people, and then I say, okay, the next move is yours. You either ignore it or you act on it. And it doesn't mean that that minute, because there are so many who've heard about the AIM program and not acted on it, maybe a year later, gotten on the program. That's very common. So, but you tell people, but you don't sit there and say, well, 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 because all they'll do is try and get rid of you. And that's not going to help.
Yeah.
So you have my sympathy, because Judy and Mike and I have the same problem, and everyone on the AIM program has that same problem. Like, how do you let people know that, listen, you can heal this stuff? You don't have to just withdraw, retreat. You don't have to just diminish, become less, become weaker. You can heal it. I don't know. At some point, Carla, it's because they don't believe they can heal anything. But I don't know the answer to that either. We just do what we can do.
Yeah.
But thank you for asking, dear.
You're welcome. And thank you for being there.
It's my great pleasure.
Okay. Do we have anyone else with courage to...
I was going to say, at this rate, Stephen, we're going to get to the glass of wine sooner rather than later.
Well,
anybody else? Anybody else? Five star. If you have a question or any comment about the topic tonight, addictions, anything at all, five star on your phone lets us know you would like to speak.
And we'll take this moment to just remind everyone that each and every Thursday there's a program called Everything Is Energy Program. You can certainly see and get the information and the details from your Friday EMC Squared newsletter that everyone receives in their email. And the three of us will be looking forward to joining many, many other folks, thousands of folks who will be joining us to listen to some of the new frequencies that were found this week, and perhaps even a little follow-up to some items that we didn't get to tonight due to time and things of that nature. So if you miss us tonight, look forward to listening to us tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific. We look forward to spending some time with you there.
Mike, I got one more person to get in here. This is area code 516. I just unmuted your line. Go ahead.
Hi. How would you go about self-healing a sex addiction?
I can't hear. I'm sorry.
How would you go about self-healing a sex addiction?
Judy, help me out. How would we go about
your voice is a little soft. We need to ask you to speak up because I couldn't hear either. Wait, I heard
was,
you. How would you go about healing what?
A sex addiction.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
A sex addiction?
Yes.
I would have to look at you, and no pun intended, as a sex addict, if you were talking about yourself, and ask very simply, this is what I do, ask, What are the etiologic factors? What are the basic causal factors in this sex addiction? Now, I've dealt with it a number of times, and every time, interestingly enough, it was an hereditary STD, the usual suspect, syphilis. And the big question is it syphilis or syphilis and all its imitators? But either way, once they're gone, it's an addictive behavior that you are able to deal with. Sex is a wonderful thing if you are using it as a way of avoiding everything else in life. That's when you're an addict. And but it's a personal enough question that I would and could look at and say, what is the cause? Is this person have the frequency of sex addiction? It has a frequency. And if the answer is yes, I would simply look and say, why? Now, you know, I call that etiologic factors, but it's why. Why is this frequency of sex addiction there? What's created it? What's caused it? And then I would answer you. In short, I don't know, other than the frequency of hereditary syphilis, of one answer, of one size that fits all. It's just not like buying a pair of socks. I wish it was that easy. But I would be able to find the answer.
I was just going to ask you to explain when you would do that, in case this person is new to the program, so they know it's not like right away that you would be able to do that.
Oh, yeah, I would be able to do that if that person still had that addiction after they've been on for, what is it, 11 months?
I've been on for a year.
Then you need to very simply contact your facilitator and say, I have this problem. Could Stephen look and see what is creating it? And I'd be glad to. And I can give you an exact answer for you, which is what you really want to know, if it's you.
Yes, I've been on the program 2 years.
That's long enough.
Yeah, okay.
I'd be
going on my third.
More than glad to look. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Fantastic.
Anything else, Judy?
That's it.
Well
then we hope that
enough,
it's
6 o'clock.
Get right on the money. You bet. We hope you've enjoyed listening to our friend Stephen Lewis of EMC Squared. If you'd like to learn more about energetic balancing in the AIM program, please contact the facilitator who told you about this call or visit the website at aimprogram.com. And we thank you once again for tuning in and for the courage to ask the questions that have been asked this evening. Stephen and Judy, always a pleasure spending time with you, learning from you, each of you. I thank you so much for your contributions to tonight's call.
Thank you, guys. All right, folks, take care, and I'll talk to you in the morning.
Thank you, Stephen. That'll do it for tonight, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Listen to us each and every Thursday on the Everything is Energy program, 12 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific. Thanks so much. That'll do it for tonight. Bye now.